My name is Tom Chick. You are listening to the Quarter to Three Movie Podcast, where this week we will be discussing and spoiling a movie called Don McKay. If you have not seen Don McKay, I, Tom Chick, personally recommend it. We'll see how Kelly Wand and Christian Milsiski, I think, feel about it in just a moment. So run away. We're going to spoil it. I'm joined by the fella giggling is Christian. I think I got that right. Milsiski? There's a W in there. I don't know how to do that. How do you pronounce that?
You said Milsiski?
Something like that, I think. Is that close?
Well, it can be if you want it to be.
Oh, the Long Island Milsiskis? I mean,
And that is Kelly Wand. Kelly Wand, do you have a Don McKay-related tagline for us this week?
Yeah, I do. Should I say it?
Just think it.
All right. What is it about a beautiful, sunny afternoon with the birds singing and the wind rustling through the leaves that makes you want to get baked out of your skull?
Now, I'm not sure how that relates to Don McKay, but we will...
It's got the word sunny in it.
Aha, very good, very good.
And birds.
That's about all, yeah.
Now, Kelly Wand, just to make sure that we run everyone off who has not seen Don McKay, why don't you spoil it for us and tell us what happens in this movie?
All right. I should disclaim to say that the synopsis will fatally ruin your first film viewing. So if you're not going to see it, keep listening.
But I think you should see it. But okay, enough with that. So Kelly Wand...
Yeah, you should see it, listen to this, and go, that wasn't worth watching that for. Spoiler alert. Or listening to this for. Ready? Here we go. Okay, so Thomas Hayden Church is a janitor who's allowed to take weeks off without any notice anytime he feels like it from the school he works at. So he gets this letter from Elizabeth Shue, his dead ex-girlfriend of 25 years ago, that she's changed her mind and she wants to hook up because she's dying. So he takes a bus to her small town, and Emmett Walsh drives him to her place and makes fun of him because his name's Don. And he stays at her house, and her nurse and her doctor are acting all weird with him. And he bangs her the first night, so her doctor tries to kill him, but he kills the doctor and buries him under some leaves. But the nurse moves the body for him. And then Keith David invites him over to check out his jukebox that only plays one song. But then everyone turns out to be evil and gaming Don McKay because of a will that he didn't know anything about, but somehow everybody else did. And no one's who they say they are except for Keith David, and the dog eats the murder weapon. But Don McKay was wearing a wire, which is a series that Tom and Dingus refuse to watch because they're racist.
All right, very good. Now, Dingus, why were you giggling when at the choice of song?
It was not giggling. It was a hearty chortle, perhaps a guffaw. But I would say, at first, when you started the song up, I thought, oh, he couldn't find the two main songs, and so he just chose something random.
He always does bank shots. He never picks the obvious one. He picks something, and we've learned he picks it randomly, so we're not even going to...
But right? Then you get the lyric Honeybee, and how could I help but giggle?
Okay. Oh, well, it's a little bit. Let me tell you guys what that song. It's a Four Tops song that the Coen Brothers used pretty prominently in Blood Simple.
Right.
I don't know if you guys made that connection when you heard the song, but that's why I picked it, because this sort of combination of a murder mystery with a Motown soundtrack to me has a lot in common with Blood Simple. And that was just sort of my elliptical way of making that observation before either of you guys could trump me. So there.
I don't believe
nicely done.
Thank you.
All right, yeah, so I call that up retroactively, just like the writer of the movie. Spoiler alert.
I think that link with Blood Simple is quite deliberate, but I like that you did that. That was nice. I did not make that link. I just heard the honeybee thing, and that made me laugh.
It ends with a honeybee. It's a little odd.
Dingus,
why don't you tell us what you thought of Don McKay? I've already made it clear that I kind of dug it. And tell us, independent of the fact that your wife is a dead ringer for the lead actress.
Really?
And did that at all color the experience of Don McKay?
And did it echo your real relationship with your wife?
Yes, this is basically what happened to us. And I never expected anything in return, to be honest.
That explains why you didn't like Legoland. Why is he talking?
Let me just start by saying Elizabeth Shue looks amazing in this.
Mm.
God.
Did you guys see Palmetto, where she's a femme fatale in that?
With yeah, Wayne but Earl? That was like 15 years ago, wasn't it? I mean, it seems so long ago.
Well, she's hot in both of them. That's what I'm
She's always hot, and she's still so freaking hot.
She recently played herself in I Hate Hamlet, which you guys, I think, are lucky enough to have not seen.
Wait, isn't Hamlet 2?
Hamlet 2. I Hate Hamlet is the... you're right. Thank you, Kelly Wand. There's actually a play
called Hamlets.
And by the way, I hate Hamlet 2, so that's where I was going with that.
I like little chunks of it, and then because he's funny. Steve Coogan's a funny dude.
I didn't see it in Hamlet 2. But anyway, Elizabeth Shue is in that recently, and she does look great. And that's used to great effect, I thought, in this movie. Dingus, go ahead. So aside from being distracted by the fact that Elizabeth Shue looks awesome and you're lucky enough to be married to a woman who's a dead ringer for Elizabeth Shue, how'd you feel about Don McKay?
The primary thing that I feel about Don McKay is I've said this before when we've seen films that are on DVD, is that one of the pleasures of watching a film on DVD for this podcast is that you can watch it more than once and you feel, or at least I feel, inclined to do so. And this film really rewards repeated viewings. And I started to feel, I watched it the first time through, and I'm just so confused. What in the world is Melissa Leo doing? Why is she talking like that? What the heck is she doing? And I felt that way about a lot of things. Why are they lying on the floor like that? And things that I didn't understand. And then when you get to the end and you say, oh, and then you watch it a second time through, so many things open up for you. And so as I watched it a second time through, I started to get this feeling of, oh, this is sort of, from my opinion, and I know you fellows dug this film much more than I did, or at least you got it, and I didn't really get it. I started to feel like this is sort of Shutter Island done right. Or maybe now I should go back and watch Shutter Island again and get the things that I missed the first time around. And I'm not going to spoil anything about Shutter Island. It's just that watching this a second time is so rewarding, especially from the point of view of watching these performances. And these performances are freaking wonderful. And I wasn't sure how I felt about it the first time through watching some of these things go on. I didn't think I really got it. But if you watch this film and then watch it again, it's just a really rewarding experience.
I do want to say, Dingus, that was part of what I loved so much about it, is watching it the first time and really having no idea. I went to see it because of Melissa Leo. I love her. She's fantastic. Thomas Hayden Church, he's fine. I can take him or leave him. I thought he was great in this. Same with Elizabeth Shue. But I was like, oh, a movie with Melissa Leo. I want to see that. Because even when she's in movies that aren't that great, like that Frozen Lake movie, I forget what it's called. It might even be called Frozen Lake.
It's Frozen River.
Frozen River. Very good. She's amazing in movies that I don't even care for. So all I knew is, hey, Melissa Leo is in this. So watching this movie and being unsure if it's a romantic comedy or what, as a matter of fact, when I first watched it, I was like, oh, God, this is going to be a romantic comedy or some drama thing. But then it started getting weird, and it has the feel of a character in limbo. Like one of those movies where the characters are in purgatory and they don't know it. And it's got this wonderful, weird, you know, what the heck is going on quality. But the beauty to me of Don McKay, and I would say, I don't even think Shutter Island really comes through with this that well, but the beauty of Don McKay is how it resolves it. This isn't a David Lynch movie, or this isn't Lost, where you're kind of left to your own devices and it's being intentionally ambiguous and weird. You know, this is a mystery that completes itself admirably, I thought. And even when it resolves, there's a couple of great twists, and I love the way this progresses. This to me is a great mystery arc where you're like, what the heck is going on? What kind of movie am I watching? And then all those questions get answered. And like you say, Dingus, it really does reward a second viewing where you can pick out all these clues that really didn't make any sense the first time around. All right, Kelly Wand, get in here. What's that? What is that? That sounded like a reservation.
I liked it the least, I think.
Though. Okay.
And I only saw it once, so maybe I have to see it again. But I really liked the acting. But then at the end, the plot holes were bugging me. And maybe they're not plot holes. I just didn't understand them because I got lost in all the exposition of the last 10 minutes.
It does sort of backload a whole lot of explanation. I mean, a lot of stuff comes clear at the very end.
And some of it doesn't make sense to me.
Okay.
And that bothers me. Because if it is a mystery and it's going to be this airtight, awesome little locked room parlor drama kind of thing, then it has to add up. All the things have to add up. And I didn't understand how Elizabeth Shue's character operated. I mean, maybe that's the David Lynch part that I'm supposed to just let wash over me. But the fact that she just happened to look enough like Sunny to come up with this elaborate plot.
But she didn't. She found. There's no inclination that she looks at all like Sunny.
Right.
She looks in the picture. The picture when she's younger, they're both blonde.
I'll give you that. One of the huge twists in the movie, one of the big reveals, Kelly Wand, isn't just Elizabeth Shue's plot. It is the fact that Don McKay, Thomas Hayden Church's character, has been complicit, and he's known all along this is not Sonny, but he doesn't.
Right. And I love that. I do love that twist. But it also makes me go, wait, she didn't know that Sonny died in the fire, but she knows about the will.
Correct.
Wouldn't her death in the fire, like Keith David, have known that?
Yes, but it's very clear, by the way, and this is something that I was watching for a second time. Thomas Hayden Church, you know, Don McKay never mentions to Otis that he's been talking to Sonny. And when Otis and Sonny see each other in the backyard, there's obviously no recognition there, and he doesn't introduce anyone. But he's being deliberately cagey with Otis about the fact that he's hooking up again with Sonny because he knows she's dead. So that there's that.
But wouldn't she have known Sonny died in the fire? Wouldn't that be public information?
Well, presumably not, because she's, Joanne Bailey, that's who she actually is, has moved to town into this house with her husband. And this fire was 25 years ago. Emmett Walsh remembers it. Otis, of course, remembers it.
Everyone in town would remember it.
But she's presumably not from town. She's presumably moved into this house from elsewhere. She, I think, does not know that Sonny has died, of course, because otherwise this plot would have been folly.
Now, how did she know about the will that Don McKay doesn't even know about?
There is no will. That's what she lies to get Marie to help her. Her whole objective is to get this guy who she thinks is still in love with her to come to town and murder her husband so right. that she can collect the life insurance from her husband. And she's going to get Marie, this woman who has been living with, who she's rented the back room out, she's going to get Marie to help her. So to get Marie to help her, she invents, and I love how ridiculous it is, this story about the secret inheritance, you know, that the janitor has, but he only gets it when he gets married.
Yeah, okay.
So that's my reading of it. I don't think a lot of that has to be clear. I mean, to me, the real reveal is that Don McKay is complicit. You know, he has that great line at the end, "I'm not crazy, I was just lonely."
Yeah, yeah.
I love that. I mean, that to me is the big reveal. Not so much Elizabeth Shue's just wonderful machinations. I mean, when Melissa Leo says to her, "How do you think this stuff up so quickly?" It's almost like a parody of that classic mystery where it's all being tied together at the end. And she just is shifting gears. I mean, I love that little bit. But none of that, in a way, matters. What really matters is Don McKay's confession that he was just lonely. And he wanted to see where this would go. The song, too, by the way, and this is another clue, the opening song, which I noticed the second time I saw it, I wrote the title down. If Love Comes Knocking Us. It's called Second Time Around.
Right.
The opening song is If Love Comes Knocking a Second Time Around. So it's just this guy who, like, you know, out of the blue, gets a postcard from his dead girlfriend, and he just kind of shrugs, and he's like, "Well, okay, let's see what happens," because he's so lonely.
But then he goes back again after he knows it's dumb, because he gets another postcard from her.
There's definitely, yeah, I mean, there's definitely some...
That's like Andy's posted in, or Woody's posted in Toy Story 3. What does it say? Okay. All right. I didn't hate it, but I felt unsatisfied by that wrap-up. So maybe I have to see it again like Dingus, because he sounds like a canary just eating the cat.
Well, I'm just excited because, like Tom, yeah. I can sort of take or leave Thomas Hayden Church. I mean, I love him when he's good, but I'm not going to rush out and see a movie that he's in. And watching him the second time around, if you will, he's great. A lot of the things that he's doing, which might seem like mugging or these odd little facial expressions he does, which might seem like another character just overdoing this janitor he has to play. Like, there's this great moment where they, right after he meets Sonny, they go to the drugstore together, and he has to pay for her medicine. And she says, you know, you just met me, and you already have to pay for my medicine. And he just looks at her like, you know, I owe you that. But there's this look in his face that's just, there's another great, well, I'm not going to go there. But just watching what he does, in addition to what Melissa Leo is trying to do, or what her character is trying to do, she uses phrasings and words that are a little beyond her because she's playing a role within a role.
Ah, good.
It's great. So she says, I don't really understand the nature of your relationship, but I would appreciate if you wouldn't go pilfering through her things. Who says don't go pilfering through her things? But it seems like something that a nurse might say, I guess, if I'm someone with tattoos all over her body. And there are great things Melissa Leo is doing and that Thomas Hayden Church is doing because of what they know about where they are in the movie.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things I loved about it. I think I have a slightly different interpretation than Tom does, though, based on what Tom just said.
Oh, roll it out. What do you got?
Well, let me ask you this. Mm-hmm. What do you think the last shot of the film means? What do you think that means? The audio and the visual of the last shot?
The bee landing on his face. You mean?
You hear a sound of running water that goes on for a couple of seconds, and then a bee lands on his face in his room.
Oh, God.
But he doesn't flinch.
Is it all a dream?
Hmm.
I'm just asking what you think, what you thought of that. I think it's an important moment, and I'm wondering what you thought.
I thought it was a playful button. I'm not sure that I would call it an important moment.
It's a callback.
But do tell. I want to hear because I don't know. I don't know where to put it. It's like the beginning of Serious Man. I don't know what to do with it, so I'm just like whatever.
No, that one makes sense. Serious Man makes sense. I'm more confused by the B. I want to hear Dingus.
Right? Yeah, I want to hear Dingus too.
Yeah. Well, for me, when I got to that moment the first time through, I had to ask that question. Is this all existing within the hallucination of somebody who is allergic to a bee sting? And this is his dying moment. And there's a number of things that don't make any sense, like a couple of things Kelly brought up. Also, the fact that she says, I didn't know how to contact you, so I contacted the high school, when she's got a stack of letters with his return address on them. I mean, there's little things here and there that don't really make sense.
But she's a compulsive liar.
Oh, yeah, certainly. But that she couldn't figure out how to use a return address is a little weird. So I'm wondering, because another one of the real pleasures for me was the attack of the doctor, because when the doctor attacks, I'm sort of sitting there going, is this a dream? Is this a dream, this attack? And then it keeps going on and on and on. And it's kind of awesome that it's not a dream because a lot of times in movies, this is a dream. He wakes up and, oh, the doctor didn't really attack me, but it's real. And then but it's so absurd and has such great absurd layers to it, the way he stabs the doctor's arm for a while.
That was great.
And then
it's a great right turn. That actor's really good because you don't see it coming at all.
Right.
And if he seems to go, well, it's not like he's going to kill him at this part. That's pretty good.
And the doctor looks different to me in that scene. But I think, you know, I watched the scene before that where the doctor does this awful, awkward examination of her. And he doesn't introduce himself at first. There's this great the way these characters interact is perfect for this sort of film noir. How are we supposed to act in this situation? I mean, it's great. The doctor doesn't introduce himself at first. She has to offer her wrist for him, like, okay, do the examination now. And he's just like, yeah, your pulse feels good and your lungs are nice. You're fine. And then he introduces himself to Don McKay and his mustache. I had to watch that scene a couple of times to see does he have a mustache here? Because he's very obviously has a mustache in the attack scene. And I just had to scrub that because I think it's just lighting.
He does some cool with his teeth, too, there, doesn't he? In the attack scene?
Anyway, I am not entirely sure that that last scene isn't supposed to give us the feeling that all of this sort of exists within some sort of a bubble.
And I think it's more of a, I wouldn't read too much into it because it just seems like a playful last-minute sort of addition. You could interpret it as his sort of memory or longing for something dramatic, but I don't think there's enough in the rest of the movie to support that. Dingus, you mentioned, though, that you thought Kelly Wan brought up some good points about things that didn't make sense, but I don't, like what? What did Kelly Wan bring up that doesn't make sense?
I don't remember now. Kelly Wan, didn't you bring up something that didn't make sense?
Yeah, Tom shot it all down, but I wasn't buying a word he was saying. But I saw the bee sting as him, not flinching from the bee. Like, he gamed the bee, and Elizabeth Shue was the bee.
I like that. Very good.
But he didn't blink. He's like, yeah, there's a bee on my cheek. I got this.
I'm going with that.
I know this looks bad. Yeah, he is. Hmm.
Well, the major thing is that return address and also his reputation in the town, because he's well known, and this incident is well known, and the idea that I didn't get the sense that they had just moved into the house. It felt like she had bought this house and been there for a while and had no idea about this around town. But your explanation about them being newcomers and not being on the inside is fine.
Hmm. They were in the – okay. I got the sense that she bought the house a while ago, and there was some line to that effect that I don't remember. Maybe I'm making it up. And I also wonder what happened to Keith David. Like, he kind of –
he bailed. I mean, I think he – that I love that scene where he calls him and the haunted jukebox turns on. Right. I just love the weirdness of that scene.
So he left town.
I'm assuming he bailed because he just got freaked out because doesn't he have some – like, they make it clear that Don left town because of the accident, and he was implicated in these deaths, and he – you know, even though he wasn't charged, he just felt awful about everything happening, so he bailed. And I think Keith David – is it David Keith or Keith David? Yeah, Keith David.
Keith David.
Says something –
David Keith's Firestarter, yeah.
Right. He says something about how much trouble he could get in as well, that he's also got some kind of a shady past. So the interpretation when he calls the house and there's only the haunted jukebox there – that I got from that is that he left town. You know, he sort of freaked out after this whole dead body thing, and left.
Well, I saw it as a red herring that he was dead.
Yeah, my interpretation was that he was murdered
by Melissa Leo.
No, by Joanne.
Oh. Wow. Okay.
What's, yeah.
I would think that they would have let us know that if that was the case, but that okay. Wow. That's dire.
Well, I get the feeling that this isn't her first rodeo. I mean,
she's so easy. She's so quick to kill people with that pot roast.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, just the way she works that last scene, you kill him.
Yeah.
No, okay, well, then you kill him. And there's that moment. There's a wonderful little moment where, you know, Thomas Hayden Church is trying to, or Don McKay is trying to get to the bottom of these pictures. Is that art?
You know, it was two of them.
And she, you know, finally, she fesses up in her first lie that her husband is dead, and he says he's dead too, which is a great little moment.
No way! Oh, no way! That is awesome. You're lying, Dingus. Is that really in there?
Yeah,
that is lovely.
It's my first husband. He's dead, and she goes, and he just looks at her and goes, "He's dead too," because she's dead.
That is awesome.
And through that and her ease at manipulating these people, I just got the sense that, you know, she's sort of a Black Widow character.
Right.
And it's not much of a leap for me to imagine her tracking down Keith David and killing him.
I'd rather be lonely, although it is Elizabeth Shue.
There's the line where they're in the car and she's slightly tipsy, and he says, "Your laugh is so different now. You used to laugh like a happy bird. It was the death of me. I like your new laugh." Mm. And then her response is, "My new laugh is going to be the death of you."
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so he's saying that and he knows she's not. That's good. Damn, you're making me like it.
Here you go, Kelly Wan. I'm going to make you like it even more. This movie, a couple of times, does things. We talked before about great scenes in movies that subvert expectations. And there are a couple of these in Don McKay that I just adored. One of which, for instance, was the, you know, bringing out the axe, because Melissa Leo early on had this great line about, I love the symmetry, the way it hangs on the wall. Besides, you never know when you might need an axe. And then later on, the axe gets brought out, but nobody uses it. It's just the
red
hair about the pot roast. Yeah. But my favorite subverted expectation scene was when Don McKay gets wired for sound, goes in and is trying to let her know that he's wired. And she's just, you've been wired, all right, where are they? And she pulls it. I mean, I just love that we're being set up for this scene about, oh, they're going to talk in code, and she knows she's being listened to, and she just wants no part of it.
And he's the worst. Thank you. You've ruined my life.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. He's the worst actor during that marriage proposal scene where he comes in to sort of agree. He's so bad. And that's one of the things I love about the movie, too, is it reminds me a bit of The Big Lebowski, where the protagonist, your supposed sleuth in Big Lebowski, he's really very dim. And in this, the supposed sleuth, you know, the protagonist in the mystery, isn't that interested in resolving it. He's not very motivated, really, and he's also a little bit dim, and he's not much of an actor when he's trying to resolve the whole thing.
But he's not dim. That's the beauty of it.
I think he does. I don't think. I mean, I get the sense, and I love this about Thomas Hayden Church. He does a great job of playing guys who don't seem that bright, and that really serves the movie well. I thought here, I did get the sense that he's kind of dim. He's not a very bright guy. You know, he can't figure out. The pictures are just folded in half, and he wonders if it's some kind of, you know, is that some kind of art? That's the stupidest thing to ask.
How about his great goofy fake steps? When he leaves you on the floor.
That's probably the most devious thing he does, yeah.
I'm going up the stairs now.
I really have to pee.
Yeah.
One of my favorite scenes that's the going off of what you were saying, Tom, the subversion of expectations, is his whole scene with Keith David, where he goes to meet almost everything they say to each other just leaps like five pages ahead. You know, they meet on the porch and Keith David suddenly frisks him.
Oh yeah.
they go in the house and Keith David says, "Want a drink?" and gives him a paper cup of water. You know, this is not what happens in a noir. In a noir, you get a glass of bourbon. He says, "You want a drink?" And he gives him a paper cup of water. And that's fine with Don McKay, by the way. That's fine. I mean, everything. And then, you know, that scene doesn't go as long as you expect it's going to go because Don McKay just suddenly says, "I killed the guy." These guys haven't seen each other in 25 years, and he just leaps forward to that. I loved that.
Yeah.
And then
Simple meets Greenberg.
Yeah. Within 2 minutes, he's saying, "Help me with the dead body," and then he goes out to the cabbie, and there's that great midnight, midnight,
midnight. Yeah. They don't bring a flashlight. That's good. I like that too. He goes, "No, I can't go back in to get the flashlight because it'll wake her up." And then she comes out, and then we never see Keith David again, which means he was murdered.
Kelly Wan, didn't you though like that? You liked all that. Come on, what an amazing cast! You must admit. Even Pruitt Taylor Vince, I love that guy. You know, his little appearance as Mel. Didn't you love all of that, Kelly Wan?
Who's Pruitt Taylor Vince?
He plays Mel. He plays Melissa Leo's husband. He's the guy. He's a big guy. He's got a lazy eye. He was in Heavy, which
is the John Polito stand-in.
He's not quite as ethnic as John Polito, but yeah, you could say that.
I was wondering why he didn't kill Elizabeth Shue after she kills his wife.
I think they're just
he's
terrible.
In shock.
Yeah, and they're just not that ruthless in terms of like the plotting and whatnot. He certainly isn't. I mean, I guess he does smack Emmett Walsh on the head and put him in the back of the car, but yeah.
I'd rather murder than blackmail. Murder seems safer. Blackmailers can murder you. If you murder someone, this isn't sounding.
But he's careful, and she's a little nervous about the fact that Sam or whoever that cabbie's name, M.M. Walsh, is in the back of the car, and in the end, she's ready to bail.
Yeah.
Melissa Leo says, "Forget, we'll get the place in Florida another way. We'll get the money. Let's go." So when he's just like feeling her pulse and feeling it, there's this very really sort of awkward thing about it, which there are a lot of these little beautiful awkward moments that make me happy to go with my original interpretation, even if it's not true. Isn't there just sort of running off? I just remember my mom talking to me or telling me about some sort of Hitchcock or Hitchcockian film where police come to investigate a murder and they
it's a short story. It's a short story.
Murder.
Yeah, the wife serves the pot roast. I think it's a famous short story.
It's a lamb chop. Spoiler alert.
Well, yeah. It's some piece of meat, and the cops end up eating the evidence. I totally know what you're talking. Well, I don't know what you're talking about, Dingus, but I know what you're trying to talk about. I'm in the same boat as you. I don't know specifically what it is, but I think it's some famous short story, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah.
There's also the one where the letter's on the bureau and no one notices it, and then there's the other one where the mailman's the murderer because you never suspect the mailman, and that's the twist.
Are these movies, Kelly Wand?
I think they're stories. Mm-hmm. There's also the one about the midget and the sawdust.
For a while, I thought we were going for a Trouble with Harry kind of a vibe. You know, finding where's this doctor's body going to be. And it turns out he's just in the freezer. That's another great sort of... He's just.
And he goes, I looked there.
Like, he says, oh, the freezer, right.
Oh, yeah. The freezer.
Oh, freezer. This is a boring observation, but it's fast. I saw The Bourne Identity right before this movie. So it was like Matt Damon is this like badass dude. And then right after that, Thomas Hayden Church is that guy. It's perfect double feature. Highly recommend. But getting back to the movie at hand, do I need to see it again to appreciate it?
Well, I really enjoyed watching it a second time just because of the performances. I mean, I really liked – and also, you know what? I think it's a smart script. I think – did Jake Goldberger write it as well?
Yes.
Okay. It's a really smart script. He's a first-time director. But I mainly enjoyed it for the performances. And I noticed, too, that Thomas Hayden Church was one of the producers. So I'm assuming that, you know, he just showed the script, that he got actors on board who really wanted to do it based on the strength of the material. So I really like it for that reason, Kelly Wand, and I think that's part of why it really bears up under second viewing, is watching what they're doing, watching them play with the subtext once you know what the resolution is. I don't know. You might enjoy it more if you... I have to admit, though, watching it a second time, I missed a little bit of... Part of the real treat of it is that sense that I talked about earlier, this what-the-heck-is-going-on bit. And you really can't capture that a second time, of course. But I enjoyed it more the first time because of that. I just love having no idea where a movie's going to go or even what genre it's going to fit into. I didn't know if there's going to be a horror movie. You know, I like that kind of thing.
I liked it until I found out what was going on, and then I didn't like it anymore.
But that's the very end when he's in the cell. You don't know until he tells the policeman that he's not crazy. He's just lonely.
Okay. Well, I've got to say, I found so much more pleasure watching this a second time, and as I sat watching it and laughing so many times, like if that cop comes in when Don McKay's in the cell, and Thomas Hayden Church's line is and the cop says
yeah.
And I like that. And there's so many little pleasures, like
that's a good title.
when he's cleaning the paint off the floor as the janitor, you know, he's just wiping the paint up. There's this big splotch of red paint, and then you see him cleaning up the blood. And it's the same motion. There are so many little things that you feel that this movie is getting. The doctor's performance. I just think this movie just has such a great opportunity for repeated viewings, as far as I'm concerned. But I love watching movies again and again and finding these little things, finding out why these little lines are so clever and important.
And this is the sort of thing, too, where I can't wait to see what Jake Goldberger does next. I mean, this guy is now sort of on my watch list.
Is that his first movie?
Yep. Yep.
Did the fact that he... couldn't clean up the blood very well, meaning he was a lame janitor.
It meant he was a lame body disposer. He had seconds to do it.
I love that scene, though. Just kicking leaves onto James Reborn's body. That's the worst way to hide a body, yeah.
As he's going into anaphylactic shock.
Right.
So his talented Mr. Ripley meets Forrest Gump.
I like it. Well done, Kelly Wand.
That was the pitch. See? Dingus?
I don't know. I'm going to stick with my interpretation of it. But I think you have to watch it again to see what that last B is about.
There's you think it was all a dream? You're going for the dream out? You think it was purgatory? B purgatory?
I don't want to say it's a dream because that just seems so sad.
In Taxi Driver, does Travis Bickle die at the end or not? Is that his hallucination or not?
Do the toys actually go in the incinerator or not? In Minority Report, is Tom Cruise actually arrested and put in dream state or not? Go, Dingus.
Yes.
How can you make so much up so much quickly?
That's not the line, but nice try.
No. How can you make up so much so quickly?
Here's a line I like. It's going to involve...
Was Night Day Cameron Diaz's hallucination after she drinks the spike drink?
That's right. Did she ever come out of being drugged? Yeah.
Right. Or is it his Vanilla Sky hallucination? Like, I'm a secret agent.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Vanilla Sky cryogenic world.
Because Cameron Diaz was also in Vanilla Sky. So that could be internal support for that.
Yeah, it's payback.
That's right.
Penelope Cruz should have gotten killed off in this one. Huh, guys?
Here's a good line I wrote. The motherfucker only plays one song, but at least it's a good one. That jukebox was awesome. I loved the fact that, you know, that to me is a great... Why have that jukebox scene in there? And there's no good reason for it, but I love that. I love those kind of details.
Well, it does matter because it goes off. Dingus saw it as a sign of his death in the next scene. Like the jukebox is a crow.
Ah, okay.
A murder of crows.
A crow in an Ingmar Bergman movie.
Okay. Does that song signify that he was murdered somehow? The lyrics?
I forget what that song was. So the song that's opening, they're both by the same Motown group. The song that opens it is...
No, they're not.
Thank you.
What are you talking about? Oh, no, Sonny. They play a song called Sonny, right. Also by the guys that played Love Comes Knockin' or whatever that was called. I don't remember the one that plays on the jukebox. What was it, Dingus?
It's called All I Need. That one's by The Temptations. So the first song is by The Topics.
Okay, well, thanks for clearing that up.
You're welcome.
Would he be thinking that song, though, if he already knows that she's not Sonny? Wouldn't he be thinking of a Joanne song?
But he wants, he's complicit in this sort of whole play between the two of them that she is.
I also like the part where Emmett Walsh got thrown in the trunk.
I feel poor Emmett Walsh just playing, and by the way, that's another Blood Simple connection.
He wasn't acting, by the way.
I feel terrible. He's playing just like crazy old guys in little cameos. I feel so bad for him because he was so good in Blood Simple. Actually, you know what? Have you guys seen The Music of Chance?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've seen that.
This reminded me a bit of that as well, because Music of Chance has that whole, you know, is it purgatory, what the heck is going on kind of thing. And it has M. Emmett Walsh.
Hmm. What's that about?
The Music of Chance is about James Spader and Mandy Patinkin getting caught up in something really weird. So there you go. I don't think I should say more because it's one of those things that, as you watch it, it's all about what the heck is going on, and that I don't think ever really resolves. Dingus, would you say that's a fair assessment of that movie?
Yeah, definitely. I think that's a movie worth seeing. So I'm not gonna. I don't want to go too far on that.
All right.
So if he mails the letters, don't they get returned to him if no one? Like, she wasn't living there for 25 years, so who was getting the letters that were left in the house? Like, they were in the mailbox when she buys the house?
Presumably, her parents still lived there, and...
Kept the letters and didn't send them back?
Yeah, and just, like, threw them in a box. You know, this is the guy who killed... Yeah, this is the guy who killed our daughter. We're just going to throw them in a box and didn't take them with them. You know, there's probably, like, a bunch of junk left in the house in the attic or whatnot, so that when Elizabeth Shue moves into the house... And I seem to recall it was just a matter of months ago. I could be wrong. But when she moves into the house, she finds the letters and is like, hey, I'm going to get this guy to kill my husband.
Well, I could totally buy her, you know, her partial cover story that they died because of a carbon monoxide leak, and that somebody had to auction off this house.
Ah, right.
And
right.
That she gets all the furniture and everything. She just buys it and moves in, and then starts.
That's right. I forgot about the carbon monoxide leak. That was great.
because they're in bed together, and he says, when this was your parents' room, wasn't the bed against the wall? And she's like, well, that was a long time ago. No, they died. They're dead. Because he asks, are they still here? Which is this would be a weird little moment. That's great. No, they died. They're dead.
And he knows she's lying, whatever she says. We learn.
Well, I think a part of it is discovery for him, too. He's wondering, where the hell is this going to go? Why is this happening? And he's willing to play along with it because...
Pre-sex.
Because, you know, something he says very early on to her, which is, what does he say? You know, she says she needs him, and he says, I know I've needed you for 25 years, which has been a real problem for me. You know, my career's kind of hit a wall. And you get the feeling that he's never gotten over this moment. There's an alternate title for this.
There is?
Yeah, the alternate title for it, it's Moment of Truth, I think.
Dude, that's terrible.
Yeah, I much prefer Don McKay, but it is, I think the alternate title, I have no idea why that is, but the alternate title is Moment of Truth. And so this is sort of that, you know, happening for him, you know, for trying to, you know, resolve all of these issues from his past by going back and saying, well, what can happen?
Kelly, one, if you had to give this movie an alternate title, what would you pick?
Paranormal Activity 2. Shadows.
Okay. Dingus, what would you pick?
B-movie.
1, 2, 3, not only you and me, got 180 degrees, and I'm caught in between, counting 1, 2, 3, feet apart, and I'm free, getting down with free feet, everybody.
That was good, Dingus. Well done. Yours was fine, Kelly Wan.
Yeah.
But I've seen the trailer, by the way. Dingus does win, but I've seen the trailer for Paranormal Activity 2. Have you seen that trailer?
No.
Do you know what the twist is in Paranormal Activity 2? Nobody knows? There's a baby.
Sweet sauce. I thought the twist was it's a different director.
That too, yeah.
More money and a piece of shit, probably.
But Kelly Wand, I know how much you love movies that have babies in them, so.
I hope there's a pet. Is there a pet, too?
Are you lying, Dingus?
What do you
mean? There's a baby and a dog in the trailer.
What?
Yep.
No way.
The trailer for Paranormal Activity 2 is a baby and a dog.
So it's a twofer.
Yeah, exactly.
They're gonna ruin it two different ways.
And they're all in wheelchairs.
They learn nothing from that movie, the first one. It's a big hit, and they go, oh, okay, let's see how we can piss all over this.
Put a baby and a dog in it, yeah.
Oh.
So this week's 3x3 is, I think, yours, Dingus. Why don't you tell us what we're doing, because I've forgotten. And I just picked Paranormal Activity 2 as one of mine, so I hope I can fit it in there. What do you got?
That is unlikely job.
Kelly, well, I just said it. It's your three least likely jobs. So this was inspired by last week's Night and Day, which I quite liked, but I had to giggle or rather chortle when Cameron Diaz revealed that her job was restoring old cars. Because it just didn't seem likely to me. And so I was trying to think of characters who have jobs that I just have to say, I don't think that's really your job. I don't believe that. So there you go.
Okay, good. So I'm going first because I have the next 3x3. My number three, actually all of mine are bad movies, I just realized. I don't mind in a movie I enjoy if Cameron Diaz is going to restore old cars. But one of my favorite things about bad movies is this kind of like, okay, this character is this terrible job. And I just realized all three of mine are bad movies. So my number three is the hit summer blockbuster disaster movie Poseidon, in which a ship turns upside down. And while the ship is upside down, Richard Dreyfuss announces that he is a gay architect. Mm-hmm. And that he knows, because of this, he knows that upside down ships will not float. So they all have to escape to the top, well, to the bottom of the ship, which is now the top. But this is just one of those things where out of the blue, because you have to, in Poseidon Adventure, give some reason for the characters stuck in the ballroom in the bottom of the ship now.
Can I just move in there and live there?
Or to just wait until they're rescued. You know, they've got to go on this trek. You know, they've got to split up. And so here, it's because Richard Dreyfuss announcing that he's an architect, he knows enough about architecture or whatever to know that an upside
boat architecture.
Boat architecture. And the fact that he's gay just makes it all the better.
Right. He knows even more that way because it's a gay boat. my first question is, A, isn't it floating already? And two, doesn't it float in the sequel to the first movie, which implies that it'll float in any theoretical sequels to the second movie? Like,
it does not
feel like it came when it floated.
Well, no, it sinks in Poseidon. In the remake, the boat actually sinks. Richard Dreyfuss's architectural acumen is proven. Yes.
Is Kurt Russell the captain?
No, Andre Brouwer is the captain, who's the one who reassures everyone that they've only turned over because it was a rogue wave.
Rogue wave.
Yeah, it's one of Andre Brouwer's finest moments as an actor. He gets to see rogue wave. But no, so Kurt Russell is, by the way, that's another instance where somebody has to do the Shelley Winters swim of death at the end to save people in the remake. So Kurt Russell volunteers to do it, I think because he's a fireman, but I think he even announces that he was on swim team, so that he's the one who has to do the swim. So that's not really a job.
That's an unlikely job.
Well, I think Degas even did start to say it could be hobbies that characters had or former sports affiliations. I don't know if that would have qualified. But that's part of Poseidon as well. And
is being a rogue wave a job or a hobby?
It's certainly a kind of, you know what? It's a good question. We'll ask Andre Brouwer at some point. He seems to know all about that stuff. So there's my number three, Richard Dreyfuss as an architect in Poseidon.
Gay architect,
and he later, so what's that kid's name? Freddie, not Hernandez. Kruger. Maybe it is Freddie Hernandez. Is
Rodriguez?
That... No.
Oh, yeah, remember, wait. I remember that scene where Dreyfuss kicks Freddie Rodriguez. After Freddie Rodriguez saved his life, by the way.
Exactly. He has to kick him off of hanging onto
his foot. He kicks him in the face and the fingers to kill him.
Right, because an elevator is coming, and they definitely... Yeah. So, but the funny thing is, to prove that Richard Dreyfuss' character is gay... They have him sort of inappropriately hitting on Freddie Rodriguez earlier in the movie or kicking him to his death. Yeah.
Huh. Well, that's a gay fetish, isn't it? Kicking someone to their death in an upside-down boat, gay boat.
I have no idea about that. I just know he's an architect. That's what I'm on. So.
You guys have the same 4th of July I did.
I think we could have made this category just on architects if we'd wanted to.
Gay architects.
I don't know about that, but I think
here's a movie from here's a line from a movie. What movie is She Was an Architect? What is that from?
They shoot horses, don't they?
In Repo Man, I think Miller, the guy who has the plate of shrimp observation, is talking about a girl he knows, and they're all making fun of her for, I think she's supposed to be a stripper or something, and Miller protests, she was an architect. So there you go, a little Repo
Wait,
Man.
Wait, men or man?
Man, Repo Man, the good one.
Yeah. That makes more sense.
All right, Kellyanne, what is your number three least likely job?
Wait, Dingus doesn't go second?
Nope.
I always forget the rules.
Well, Dingus announced this week's topic, so he goes last so that we can scoop him, you see.
My number three is the demonologist from Paranormal Activity.
What's the guy's name? You know? That was...
No, I forget. And I mean the guy who's out of the country, like, oh, I gotta get...
Oh, the one who came up here in the movie.
Well, both of them. It's a tie.
Well, that's right. The other guy wasn't a demonologist, was he? He's the guy who refers them to it. Right. Yeah, he refers to them.
Yeah. The off-screen demonologist who's out of the country is number three.
Now, do you remember his... They give his name in the movie, don't they? Like, for some reason, I'm thinking he was Russian or German. Dingus, I think you correct
your
answer.
Right. You're right. It's like Doofenshmirtz or something.
It's the old man that Woody Allen's making the documentary of in Hannah and Her Sisters who kills himself.
I've gone out the window.
Or is it Crimes and Misdemeanors?
Now doesn't that Kelly Wand, like, is it?
It's Crimes and Misdemeanors.
Yeah.
Kelly Wand, what makes this poor guy, what makes that an unlikely job? The fact that such a job exists or that he's out of the country and there aren't any others? What?
Yeah, that there's only one of them, and he's out of the country, and you can't call him. And he has a friend who won't call him, even if people's lives are at stake. No way. That part I do believe, actually.
The demonologists are much more accessible in Drag Me to Hell, I noticed. They were much more available. You know, if you needed a quick demonologist, you could get.
But they need $10,000 in cash, like within a day, or the deal's off, and then you get nothing for it. By the way, did the girl Drag Me to Hell? Did she really die, or was that all her hallucination?
According to Dingus's interpretation, yeah, it would all be in her imagination. Or she's dying. It's in her dying moment. This is her imagination. Is that right, Dingus?
I don't know what you guys are talking about because we've moved on to the 3x3.
All right.
All right, Dingus, what is your number three in this week's 3x3?
All right. This is much harder than I thought it would be because I thought I had all these. Oh, I've got a backlog of these in my head. This will be easy. Because I was really trying to avoid. What I started to fall into was, which was just bad casting. You know, oh, I don't believe he's a president or whatever. And I didn't want that. I wanted like Cameron Diaz, just like, you know, somebody tossing off, I'm a nuclear physicist. Oh, really? Are you? And not necessarily what I would consider bad casting. And I really wanted to focus on good movies where this happened in particular. And I really had a hard time with that. I really failed utterly in almost every respect. And I also sort of wanted to focus on it being just sort of the character just has said this is their job, and you might see them doing it, but it's not the point of the movie that this is their job. And I failed at that, too. So basically, the only thing I succeeded at is that none of these examples are examples of bad casting. In each case, I think that the person was cast properly. It's just that I just don't believe the job.
Wait, can you say all that again? Because I was totally thinking about something else.
Are these bad movies, Dingus?
As it turns out, yeah, they are, unfortunately. One of them is a movie I really used to quite like, and as I've watched it more and more, I've gotten less and less fond of it. But most people would say it's a good movie. The third one is flat out a bad movie, so we'll just start with that one.
Mm-hmm.
And the third one is
Jedi Padawan.
No, it's somebody playing the head chef of a restaurant, and you never really believe the head chef of a restaurant.
I know what it is.
What is it, Kelly? On?
It's Spanglish.
It certainly is Spanglish.
Yeah.
So Adam Sandler plays John Klasky. He's the chef. And I just never believe. I never believe he's the chef. And I don't believe that Adam Sandler is poorly cast in this movie. I think he's fine. I just don't believe he's a chef. Partly because I've been around head chefs of restaurants, and I know what they're like, and I know the kind of hours they work, and I know the kind of people they are, and I just never believe that. He makes a good sandwich. He reads his reviews. I just don't believe this job. I think it's very, very unlikely that Adam Sandler is the head chef of his own restaurant in a high-powered town like L.A., from the East Coast.
You didn't believe that he only works nights and that he's called the best chef in the United States by a New York film critic after he makes grilled fish with parsley on it. You didn't believe that?
No, I didn't believe.
Was there? Let me ask you.
Nights, Dingus.
Dingus, was there anything in Spanglish that you believed?
The sex scene.
I believed Paz Lerman's accent.
And did you believe her as a maid?
No, mm-hmm. I didn't believe her as a mother or a maid or.
Okay. What about Forrest Leachman as a mother? Did you buy that one? As a drunken mother.
I believe her as a jazz singer.
All right. Well, so my number two is actually bad casting. So I kind of feel bad about it. But it's such a
That's okay. You know, once again, this is just the limitation that I put on it.
Right. Actually, are all of mine bad? Well, no. So my number two is an actor I really like in a horrible movie. But unlike my last two movies, my last two picks, these are both bad movies, but I love both of them. This is a horrible movie that I love called Chupacabra Terror. And There's a couple of choices from Chupacabra Terror. I almost went with Shalane Simmons as a kickboxing instructor, but she totally looks like a kickboxing instructor, and it's totally appropriate for the material because she has to kickbox the Chupacabra at the end. My problem with Chupacabra Terror's least likely job in it is the fantastic Giancarlo Esposito, who I've really fallen in love with from the last two seasons of Breaking Bad. You know, that guy's been around forever. He does a lot of good TV stuff. In Chupacabra Terror, Giancarlo Esposito plays a cryptozoologist. Now I don't know how much you guys know about cryptozoologists.
Bigfoot.
Well, cryptozoologist is basically shorthand. It's a long Latin word to say nut job. There's no such thing as cryptozoology. It is not an actual pursuit. Cryptozoology is a joke. So the problem I have with Giancarlo Esposito playing a cryptozoologist in Chupacabra Terror is the guy looks – Giancarlo Esposito, he just exudes intelligence and this sort of sharply perceptive quality. I love that guy. And having him be a cryptozoologist, I just don't buy it. Now, we need a cryptozoologist in Chupacabra Terror to get the Chupacabra onto the cruise ship, which is captained by John Rhys Davies. But the fact that it's Giancarlo Esposito, I just don't buy. And in the end, he has to sort of become the evil guy. You know, he's kind of the Burke of the movie, if you look at it as an Aliens counterpart. So that's my pick. I love this movie. It's a horrible movie. I love the cast. I love all, even the horrible performances in it. I love Giancarlo Esposito. I love the Chupacabra. But I just didn't buy him as a cryptozoologist. So
I thought you were going to bring up the Gimli as the captain.
I think actually John Rhys Davies makes a good like luxury cruise liner captain. I thought he handled that well. Actually, one of the real least likely jobs is the poor fellow they have playing the leader of the Delta Force, who arrives on the cruise ship to contain the Chupacabra. That poor guy, you know, he's in a bicycle helmet and he's got pads, like rollerblading knee pads to look like he's and they're wearing these like painter overalls to look like Navy SEALs, and they have these like plastic gun replicas that look like they're just a shade too small, so they don't look too real. That poor guy has a tough time, but that's a casting issue also.
Is there a cryptozoologist in Incident at Loch Ness?
Yes, there is.
Okay.
Well, it's a real thing in that it refers to the search for animals that are considered legendary, but nobody pays them to do it.
they're right.
That's the part the movie made up.
They make a living, bosses. Right? They make a living by going on, right. You know, coast to coast.
They're freelance volunteer quacks. Right.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah.
There's not a cryptozoology institute that they all report to and turn in papers.
And do you guys know who Giancarlo Esposito is? Because I don't know any of his TV stuff. I mainly know him from movies.
Of course.
How do you know
who he is?
I don't remember. Wasn't he in Homicide?
Yeah, he did, well, or CSI, or he did one of those TV, yeah, he's had, like, a lot of TV experience, so probably.
Racist.
Wow, why is that racist?
I picture him as the flutist from that New York Stories, the Coppola one, that sucks really bad.
He's in that?
That's who I think Giancarlo Esposito is when you say his name, based on my ignorance, which is more interesting than the truth, probably.
Well, this isn't really a spoiler. He shows up in the second season of Breaking Bad as the manager of a fast food restaurant.
Hmm.
And that also, I'm like looking at him going, no, this guy does not seem, like I say, he exudes intelligence. And you're like, no, this guy does not seem like the kind of fellow who manages a fast food restaurant. I'm not buying that. And that cognitive dissonance really pays off in Breaking Bad. So.
Hmm.
Do remember him from Homicide: Life on the Street. I think that's where I got to know him. I always confuse him with the bartender guy in Pulp Fiction, but they're not the same dude. But I know Giancarlo Esposito was in Homicide.
He's also, as I hope you guys have just now realized, it is great fun to say his name.
And Chupacabra.
Exactly. That right there, it's a double threat.
Tom, do you know what Chupacabra means?
Goat sucker. I know all about Chupacabras because I'm a huge. Let me tell you, I am the world's biggest fan of Chupacabra Terror. This is a horrible movie, but I love this movie. I own it, and I heartily recommend everyone listening sees Chupacabra Terror. And it means goat sucker.
But can you say the most important line properly?
I can't. I can't. I cannot replicate Shalane Simmons' fantastic intonation, where she remarks on, you know, what we're seeing. You know, she has this fantastic scene where she's telling you, the audience, and also one of the other characters, what she's seeing, and you just you can't fake that kind of performance. It's fantastic.
Okay.
I need to get. That's going to be my ringtone if I ever get a cell phone.
That's a great idea.
All right, Kelly Wand, what is your number two least likely job?
Wait, is Chupacabra basically a vampire dog, like Chihuahua, like a hairless vampire dog?
Depends on, I guess, the movie. In Chupacabra Terror, he's just a dude in a rubber suit that looks like it costs about $40.
Hmm.
And he does not actually – they do use – so here's a nod to the source material, the lore that inspired it. In the opening of Chupacabra Terror, they actually use a goat to lure him and capture him. So there you go. Mm. They know their lore in Chupacabra Terror.
Mm.
By the way, alternate title for Chupacabra Terror, Dark Seas.
How's seas spelled?
Just the normal.
Oh, I thought it was Dark Seas, S-A-E-I-Z. I thought right. Dingus was Dark Seas. No one cares. Okay. My number two is, this is such a tough one. I keep changing it. This is my last chance to vote to, like, final draft. Okay, never mind. No one cares. Forrest Whitaker as a professional empath in Species.
Wow, I'd forgotten he was in that.
Wow. He comes in and there's, like, blood everywhere, and he's the guy who goes, something terrible happened here. He, like, raises a hand, closes his eyes, and says that. And that's his job. Like, the government pays him to say that shit when he comes to, like... It has nothing to do with aliens, either.
So the government, he's a civil worker. Like, he's a civil servant. He works for the government. He's a government employee. Wow. The government is professional empath.
He's the Jason Bourne of empaths. And he never does anything in the movie except that. Like, yeah, I feel pain. I feel this dead body was hurt when it died, when the tongue went through his head, when he kissed her.
Did he play the same occupation in that Dreamweaver movie? Not Dreamweaver, what was that called?
Battlefield Earth?
Oh, wow, he was awesome in that. No, it's some. It's got a...
That was a likely job, though, because he was a gold miner in that. A Scientologist gold miner alien, which is...
How do you find him as a ninja assassin?
Ghost Dog.
That's a good movie, right?
It's a very good movie. Yeah. He makes a great ninja assassin.
His being a repo man's a little far-fetched, isn't it? That's an unlikely job for someone.
Well, it's the future, so we'll have to see how the future plays out. Yeah,
it's 50-50.
That's an unlikely job for someone really fat.
Hey, hey, hey.
Racist.
He's big boned. That's just mean.
All right. Yeah. I suck. That's my number two. I suck.
Thing is, what is your number two least likely job?
All right. I really love this least likely job. I'm going to give you guys a little bit of dialogue, not just a quote, but a little bit of dialogue.
Do you want me to do one of the lines, like one of the characters?
There's no way you can. I apologize.
Oh, right.
Maybe you could. I tell you what, I'll give the first line, and if you know the next line, you go ahead and chime in.
Okay.
You were going to be a gymnast.
Oh, I know. It's Jurassic Park 2.
Clumsy as he is stupid?
No.
I really didn't take it. I really thought I scooped you, Dingus. I'm sorry.
Wait, do it again? I agree with your child. Up.
He's coming back.
And the reply to that is,
Good point. The line is, you were going to be a gymnast. And then the reply is, a journalist. That's what I said.
I
feel like I've seen this, but I don't know it. Yeah.
You have seen it, but you're not a girl, so you don't remember it. It's When Harry Met Sally.
Oh, good Lord.
That movie's got to stop coming out.
Sorry.
That's the new Star Wars. Moratorium on that movie, on Rob Reiner.
So what is it? Is it Bruno Kirby as a journalist?
Well, he is, but more importantly, Sally is a journalist.
She is? I don't remember even having a job in that movie. She never reported anything, did she?
No, she just sort of stared at her computer monitor wistfully.
Right.
and then would sort of tap at the keys every now and then.
What was his job?
He was a political advisor or something like that, which is equally unlikely. But I can sort of imagine that character holding down sort of a political advisor, kind of sleazy kind of.
So they're both writers. So they're destined. Okay.
Right. Well, they get to sit in front of computers and that kind of thing. But the idea that she's a journalist is completely unbelievable, I think, based on just where the movie goes and who she is. And, his recollection when they meet again is you were going to be a gymnast. And she says a journalist, which is just sort of a cute little play on words and just a goofy joke and sort of a misogynistic moment. And, I tried to stay away from the sort of just misogynistic, like, well, she could never be a nuclear physicist kind of value judgments. But there's no way Sally Albright. Oh, thanks. Thank you, Charles Dickens. There's no way Sally Albright is actually a journalist. And the movie doesn't really care. It just gives her a New York job and throws her into New York because she wants to go to New York to find out, to discover the world and discover life. And this is just fodder for jokes. So Harry can say, you're going to New York to write about other people's lives then. You never get a sense that she's actually a journalist or there's any sort of way that she has any sort of life that a journalist might lead. I mean, at least with Margot Kidder, you have a sense that she's a journalist, even though she's goofy. But with Sally Albright, I just never believed that she's a journalist. And this was sort of the epitome of this category for me, just this throwaway, oh, that's my job. And no, I don't believe that's your job. I never would believe that that's your job.
So he's a political advisor, and their jobs never intersect or play any role in the plot. That's so weird, isn't it?
Yeah, well,
I mean, a lot of movies do that. I mean, and that's something interesting about this topic choice is so many movies, they just want to throw out a job as part of the, rather than establishing or creating a character, they just throw out a job that's supposed to be shorthand for, hey, this character is literate and intelligent. And it sounds like, I don't remember When Harry Met Sally that well, but it sounds like that's the kind of thing they're just doing here. Like, oh, let's make her a journalist. She is smart. She's got her finger on the pulse of what's happening in the world, and she writes.
But he's a political advisor because he's male. Which makes him all right.
There's an awful female journalist role that's crucial to the plot. Rod Lurie? Who's the guy that did the female vice president movie with Joan Allen?
That's Rod Lurie.
Yeah. So Rod Lurie recently did a terrible Valerie Plame movie. I wish I could remember what it was called. The best thing about it is Vera Farmiga basically playing Valerie Plame, and she's amazing in this.
I love her.
But the movie,
isn't that The Orphan Kid?
No. Vera Farmiga is she's the mother in Orphan. She's the wife in.
Oh, right.
She's in Down to the Bone. In this movie, Kate Beckinsale plays the journalist thrown in jail for not revealing her source. and it's Kate Beckinsale just utterly unconvincing as a journalist. But crucial to the plot. It's all about, it's sort of, you have to buy it. That should have been my number one, actually. I'm changing it.
I assume Kate Beckinsale's a journalist in Serendipity, even though I don't remember. Just because she's in New York.
Dingus or Kelly Wand? In what movie did Meg Ryan play a poetry professor?
Proof of Life. Wait.
No. Do you know this one, Dingus?
POA.
No. And I went through a number of teachers that I sort of tossed out as ideas. Yeah.
Well,
Meg Ryan didn't come up.
The thing about
that's not in the cut, is it?
Yeah, and she's so convincing. I loved her in the cut. She's so
good at
it. And you totally buy that she's this, 40-something sort of world-weary professor. So there you go.
In the cut.
In the cut, I think, has on Rotten Tomatoes something like 17%. It's it's widely regarded as a terrible movie. But I think it's
still twice as good as Last Airbender, then.
Yeah. But it's Jane Campion.
Forget it.
No. You should totally see it. You should totally see it. Cut.
Sexist. Kelly Wand. In the cut. Well, that's a good title.
You know what
it's also. It's also got a great sense of what's going on here about it.
Yes. Very much so.
I'll just Google it while you guys talk. Erotic thriller.
here's my number one. You ready for this? Again, terrible movie, but I love this movie. Ben Affleck as one of the world's best deep core oil drillers.
You said Deep Impact?
How dare you? Because Ben Affleck, so the other in the other world's best deep core oil drillers are an ensemble, and they're convincing. They include Bruce Willis, Steve Buscemi, Will Patton, Owen Wilson, and Michael Clark Duncan. Now you throw into this assemblage Ben Affleck, and you're like, no, he does not strike me as one of the world's best deep core oil drillers. Even Owen Wilson I can buy in this part, because Ben Affleck just reeks of this Ivy League privilege. And even in Armageddon, he's just so out of his element. If Armageddon has one potentially fatal flaw, because I think many of Armageddon's flaws are actually assets, if it has one that you really cannot get around, it's Ben Affleck. It feels like it needs a male ingenue. And that's I think what Ben Affleck what Armageddon suffers from most is Ben Affleck having to play the lead.
You could have just ended that sentence with Ben Affleck. What's Liv Tyler's job on that drilling platform with them? Like his daughter does the paperwork?
She's like the receptionist, I think. She's the receptionist for the world's best deep core oil drillers.
Yeah. Why isn't she going to space then? They're gonna need a receptionist to type in the bomb thing.
They have NASA to do that.
Plus, they have William
Fichtner for that. Go ahead, Dingus. She had what?
She also has to do one of the deep core oil drillers.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Well, plus,
wouldn't they all be doing her though?
But no, Bruce Willis doesn't want her around Ben Affleck. He does not want Ben Affleck dating her. And it opens with that wacky shotgun chase. You know, Bruce Willis shooting a shotgun at Ben Affleck, which is just wacky and funny.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that great, guys? Didn't you love that part?
That makes the government want to hire him. He seems like a rational choice.
Well, yeah, they have no choice. You know, Billy Bob Thornton is forced to do, you know, this is the extreme he's driven to by an asteroid the size of Texas hurtling towards Earth.
Isn't that dangerous for the oil and the water?
You know what? I think that we should give, I think British Petroleum should look these guys up. I think they could have a lot to do. As far as like South,
we should put British Petroleum in charge of nuking an asteroid if it ever flies over.
British Petroleum is praying for an asteroid right now.
They don't pay taxes ever either. Are they? Yeah, that's true. That's the best thing that could happen to their stock. Dated the episode 2010.
All right, so there's my number one pick. But even
why does he just hire uglier subordinates, Bruce Willis, so that she won't bang them?
Well, he's going to fire, I think, Ben Affleck. I think that's the dramatic tension between the two of them. But over the arc of the movie, he redeems himself in Bruce Willis's eyes, and Bruce Willis sacrifices himself so that Ben Affleck can be with his daughter. It's a lot of great character development in that movie. Most people don't know.
You mean when they jump the dune buggy over the...
But you don't understand. Steve Buscemi has space sickness. It makes sense. Space sickness, Kelly Wong.
All the good characters get killed off. I hate that. It should have been Steve Buscemi's the only survivor, and maybe Owen Wilson.
Peter Stormare, that's right, gets killed off as the one cosmonaut on the International Space Station. That's really sad. I know.
He's very good. I really believe him.
They get out of that disaster by turning a crank, if I remember correctly. Which is another reason I can see why you like the movie.
The video game suspension, yeah.
Just like 2012, where they turn the crank and it's suspenseful at the end.
2012, however, does not have Udo Kier as a NASA psychologist.
Who's the hell's that?
Udo Kier?
Udo Kier?
Yeah. Oh, the Udo Kier. That Udo Kier, not the serial killer Udo Kier.
Do you really not know who that is, Kelly Wand?
I don't know anyone.
He's a wacky, like, is he German? I guess he's German or Austrian. He might be Russian. I don't know.
I think he's Swedish.
He could be Swedish.
All right. Well, okay, that's all we need to know about him. We just need to know his nationality, not his achievements. Okay, so we've covered him. Okay. Number one.
All right, what is your number one, Kelly Wand?
My number one least likely job in a movie. It's a tie, but wait, before you freak out. Oh, I got to type more. Hang on. It's Dan Aykroyd as a crazy DJ in Couch Trip and as a crazy cop with multiple personalities in Loose Cannons. Gene Hackman. who's like the crazy guy. I have to pick one of those?
That's not his job. Being crazy isn't his job.
That is. It is. No, he's a DJ and a cop. Okay. Those are jobs.
What's the name of the movie where he's a DJ?
Couch Trip.
Couch Trip?
She shows no skin. It sucks. It's just...
Well, I'm only going to write that one down. There's only room.
In... No. Okay, then if I can only have one of those, it's Loose Cannons, because that one he's...
Wait, as a cop in Loose Cannons?
Yeah, with Gene Hackman.
Is that where he's on a train with Ann Archer?
No, he does like, Tweety Bird voices to distract people in the bar. It's like 48 hours, but instead of being black, he's crazy. Racist.
Wow.
And Gene Hackman lives with a kitten in his car. He's like... DeSoto or something.
I like that. That's a cool.
His furniture's on the top. I know, I'm making it sound good. I'm ruining it. I'm doing it, Don McKay.
Is it better or worse than Cop Out?
It's whiter than Cop Out.
Okay.
So if you're a racist, it's great.
So is it just that Dan Aykroyd doesn't do crazy very well, or doesn't do cop very well?
It's the fact that no, that has nothing to do with it. Well, he didn't do either very well, but he's a terrible cop and he's a terrible crazy man. But the idea that they would pair up the Gene, well, I guess it makes more sense the more you think about it. The Gene Hack, like, that would be your job is, oh, he's a cop, but he has multiple personalities, so that'll help us in this particular neat, like, where they're tracking down Nazis, like a neo-Nazi organization.
Wow.
Like,
who has the multiple personalities, Dan Aykroyd or Gene Hackman?
Gene Hackman's the Nick Nolte. He's long-suffering.
Right.
He's the tough, hard-edged...
He's the Danny Glover. It's a Lethal Weapon sort of...
He's too old for this shit, and then Mel Gibson / Dan Aykroyd, pretty much the same guy.
Wow.
Right, what Dingus just said.
It's trying to airplanify Lethal Weapon without going far enough, I don't think. And without even being, you know, without casting it properly or anything. It's just awful.
Yeah, and also he's supposed to have multiple personalities, but they only take the form of, like... Captain Kirk and Tweety Bird, like, they're just different TV characters, which isn't really multiple personalities.
All right, good.
That seems unlikely to me, too. It's not even what it says. It's not even multiple personalities. It says on his resume he has multiple personalities, but he's just doing Tweety Bird. That's not likely.
All right.
He would never get through the Academy like that. He'd have to have real multiple personalities to get through the Academy. I'm still talking.
Dan Aykroyd has played a lot of cops, though, hasn't he?
He played an unlikely spy, an unlikely pimp in Dr. Detroit. That was unlikely, too.
Played Joe Friday.
Right.
That's what I'm thinking of, yeah.
In Driving Miss Daisy, wasn't he a cop, too? In that?
Retired.
Did you see Loose Cannons?
I did not, no. It sounds like Dingus has, though.
Dingus knows a lot about Loose Cannons.
Yeah.
Based on that sigh. All right, that's my number one. I suck. I have some good runners up that'll make up for my crappy list.
All right. Dingus, what is your number one least likely job? So you're the guy who came up with this. What's the best instance you could think of a least likely job?
This is why he came up with the list.
Yeah.
His number one. So it's going to be really good.
This is not why I came up with the list. But this came to me late in the game, and I couldn't not. I have a long list of things in there. All right, I'll just give you a quote. We'll get out of here. Right, you fellas ready?
Rock and roll.
I appreciate this whole seduction thing you've got going on here, but let me give you a tip. I'm a sure thing.
Oh, I'm so bad at this game.
There's no reason either if you wouldn't know this.
Oh, I know it. I know it. Munich.
The sure thing.
No and no.
Munich. I like Tom. That was pretty funny.
How about this? Who would you think is the least likely prostitute character in American film?
Kathy Bates.
Julia Roberts.
Yes, Julia Roberts in Pretty Woman. All right, so once again, this is not bad.
I like
cast.
Tom's guess again.
She's perfectly cast for this film, but there's no way I would ever believe in a million years that this girl is a prostitute. And this film was originally envisioned as a much grittier, I think, New York film about an actual prostitute that you could. I mean, I could think of a number of women who have played more believable prostitutes. I mean, Charlize Theron in Monster, or if you want to go with a good one, a good-looking one, Elizabeth Shue in Leaving Las Vegas. I mean, these are people. Okay, I believe that these people are sex workers, which is an actual job, an actual legitimate, depending on how you want to use the word legitimate, but a legitimate occupation, sex worker. I do not believe for a second that Julia Roberts is a sex worker. No matter what they try to say, okay, some dude smacks her around and makes a pass at her, or some rich dude does. And that's what's supposed to make us think of how downtrodden sex workers are. She's the cleanest, squeakiest, cleanest sex worker of all time. And again, she's not poorly cast for this movie. She's absolutely appropriately cast, and this made her a star, and for good reason. She's amazing. She's an amazing actress. But the idea that she's a prostitute, that she's this innocent hooker who's just, you know, I just couldn't make it as an actress, so I'm just hooking for a little while. It's like the Little Mermaid went through some freaky wormhole or something. It's just bizarre. I really hate the way this film treats sex workers. I know that's an odd thing to say, but I really hate
it. Now, isn't Pretty Woman, though? It's Gary Marshall, right? It's just it's an inconsequential romantic comedy, though, isn't it?
Oh, yes.
That's
yes,
what it wound up as. It was
certainly. Right.
It's a Cinderella story by Gary Marshall. I mean, that's what it turns into. I mean, it was supposed to be a grittier look at this character, and instead it becomes a Cinderella story of a hooker who is Cinderella. If my wife ever listens to this, she's going to come and smack me upside the head for this. But that, you know, that's too bad. I every time I see the poster for this or the picture of the poster, it just drives me crazy. The very idea that we're supposed to believe that Julia Roberts is a prostitute in this movie drives me nuts.
But all prostitutes have hearts of gold and are squeaky clean and leading ladies. That's what I've always thought about prostitutes from seeing movies.
Yeah.
Well, they might very well be, but I don't believe this character is.
her friend's Laura San Giacomo, isn't it? I kind of believe her. She was a prostitute.
Yeah. Laura San Giacomo is a hell of an actress.
Yeah.
And I believe almost anything she does. Mm-hmm. So that's fine with me. And as her friend, I forget what her friend's name is, because I think Julia Roberts' name is Vivian, and I can't remember Laura San Giacomo's character name. But she's great. She's fine. I believe anything she does. I just don't believe that this character is an actual prostitute. It's just a placeholder for some other Cinderella thing, and we decided to make her a hooker.
That movie was written by J.F. Lawton, who did envision it as a much darker movie, and he later wrote Fart Man, the movie, which was awesome. It's very dark originally.
I never believed that guy was a fart man.
Yeah, that's an unlikely gig.
Kelly Wand, what's an example of a believable prostitute in a movie?
Jodie Foster.
Not even sure. Well, I guess that had that like 70s kind of thing going.
Krista Allen in the Emmanuel in Space Sextology.
I don't even know what that is.
Mm.
What about Lorraine Stanley in London to Brighton?
Oh, that's good.
That's really good. Wish I'd seen it.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, prostitutes are all, they're all happy-go-lucky. Just
the Sex and the City girls, I believe in their whorishness.
Whoa, they're all journalists, Kelly Wand.
Hey, sir, just a marker, why the long face?
One of them might be a lawyer, but I think all the Sex and the City girls are journalists.
Yeah. I think that they're gymnasts, actually.
Wait, they're not all journalists.
Well, right, one of them's a lawyer. I think one of them's a doctor. There might be a doctor in there. No, actually, I do know. I don't know what they are. I think all I know is I'm pretty sure one of them is a lawyer. Dingus, you've seen all the Sex and the City movies. You watch that TV show. What are their occupations? Is one of them a prostitute?
No, one of them is a fashion designer. The other is a mime.
Mime. Okay. What are
no.
the Yeah. One of them's a mime, Kelly Wand.
I don't believe that.
That's Why true. Do you That's not believe true. That?
Which one?
Kim Cattrall. It plays a mime.
She is. What? And the other's a psychotherapist. And the other's an architect.
Right.
Mm. A gay architect?
a garkitect.
If they were all lesbians, it'd be kind of a good show. Mm-hmm. And it's written by gay dudes, so I don't know.
All right.
Thanks, Tim.
Next week's 3x3. I want your...
Wait. We have runners up.
Oh, right. Okay.
Christina Applegate as a lawyer in The Sweetest Thing is one of my runners up.
Well, there's all these things. I'm glad nobody went for the low-hanging fruit of the Denise Richards as the nuclear physicist in the James Bond movie.
Oh, that's right.
That's the big joke. I mean,
that wouldn't get too much. I don't know, because that's what a James Bond movie has.
Right. Exactly.
I mean, it's just because it's one of the Pierce Brosnan ones. It's supposed to be kind of serious. It seems jarring as
right.
opposed to.
Right.
Dennis Rodman is an Interpol agent in Simon Says.
Wow, I actually saw that movie. Good Lord.
Cindy Crawford is a lawyer in Fair Game.
Mm-hmm.
Tom Selleck is a writer in Her Alibi. He's a piece of shit writer. Going to the courtroom. And Harlan Williams is an astronaut in Rocket Man. Oh, and Gerard Butler is the bounty hunter who tracks down his ex-wife for the parking violation and the bounty hunter.
You didn't like that? He breaks when he gets the order to go bring her in. He first goes into her apartment. He deletes all of her TV shows off of TiVo. He eats Doritos on her white sheets and then wipes his hands on the white sheets. And he drops her toothbrush in the toilet.
Oh, wait, now I want to see it. It sounds like the breakup that Vince Vaughn won, like where someone hates her. Like taps into your hate of Jennifer Aniston.
You know what? Yeah. He's the sympathetic character. He's the one played for. And here's the unbelievable part of the bounty hunter, is Gerard Butler as an American. Like his accent.
Right.
He just can't talk American.
Doesn't he play like the obnoxious dude in the Heigl movie too? The Ugly Truth. Like is that his new?
Did not see that one. I'm afraid.
Uh huh. I see the Heigl.
I love that phrase. Here's the unbelievable part of the bounty hunter.
Yeah. The Doritos.
Dingus, what were your runners-up?
I had a couple of architects. Zach Braff plays an architect in this weird remake movie called The Last Kiss. And, you don't believe it.
Can I guess your other one?
Yeah, go ahead.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt in 500 Days of Summer.
You know, no, actually, because he's not. He doesn't have
Wants
that job.
To be. Right. Right. But doesn't he, at the end, go to apply for that job?
He does. I never believed he was a greeting card writer either, but...
Good point, actually. That was far more unbelievable. Yeah, exactly.
No, the other architect, and this actress actually almost made my list twice. This is Michelle Pfeiffer, and she plays an architect in One Fine Day, which is this goofy romantic comedy with her and George Clooney, and she plays an architect, and he plays, I think, a journalist, and again, it's sort of a facile. Yeah, I'm going to show you a model that I made, and I'm going to write a story. So, but I hadn't seen that in so long that it doesn't really resonate with me. The one that I really came close to choosing.
Wait, real quick. Hold on, Dingus, before you say your next one. I remember that movie, and George Clooney in that movie plays a mime.
You're right. That's right.
What? You guys are blowing my mind with this mime shit, man.
I also remember, all I remember about that movie is the great line where she accuses him of having a Peter Pan complex and not growing up, and then he counter accuses her of having a Captain Hook complex.
Sexist.
I think it's, what was your other runner-up?
The one where she almost made the list was Dangerous Minds, because I don't believe she's a teacher, and I don't think she does a bad job in the movie. As I remember, she's good in it.
Do you believe she's a former Marine?
No, but I don't believe she's a former Marine teacher. But that movie set me off in the wrong foot immediately, because it gives that Hollywood version of right. classrooms where the teacher walks in and kids are sitting on desks with a boombox throwing paper at each other. I've been in classrooms many, many times over the course of my life, and I've never seen that happen. But I just didn't believe her as a teacher. I don't think she does a poor job in it. I just didn't believe it. But I haven't seen it in so long that I really couldn't.
Well, you know, that movie was originally, like you mentioned how Pretty Woman was supposed to originally be. Movie, her job was originally going to be, instead of a teacher, a mime. And it was Dangerous Mime.
I really like you people.
Dangerous Mimes. All right. That's a good callback.
All right. Let's do next week, 3x3. So here you go. I don't have anything for this yet. So I'm in the same boat as you guys, where I haven't thought of anything. And I don't know how tough this is going to be. And I don't think the category is going to need much explanation. So let me just throw this out here, and then I'll field questions. For next week's 3x3, I want you to give me three movies that you can stop watching after the opening scene.
You can?
You can, yes.
That you can stop watching.
After the opening scene, you can just stop watching it.
Okay, I have a question. What the hell are you talking about?
Does that really not spark anything for you?
That you have to or that you choose to?
No, just three movies that after the opening scene, you know what? You can just stop watching it. Basically, what I'm looking for are opening scenes before terrible movies. Good openings to terrible movies. Is that
okay?
Does that make?
Yeah, that makes more sense.
Okay, Dingus, do you have any questions?
No, this is very close to something that I've had on the back burner for a while.
Well, ha ha.
So I just want to be clear. It's an actual scene in the movie.
Yeah, the opening scene. Basically, what I'm looking for are bad movies, like good opening scenes to bad movies.
Okay.
So, the way I just want to phrase it are movies you can stop watching after the opening scene, where opening scene gives you the best you're going to get. So there's really nothing worth sticking around for.
That's close to what I had, but it's not the same thing. So good. Okay.
Okay. So there you go. Next week we will also be seeing the Twilight movie since we missed it this week.
Mm-hmm. So
we want to be sure to get that in this summer. We know
Taylor Lautner's Dreamy.
I don't even know who that is. Is that someone in the Twilight movie?
He's a werewolf with a wax chest.
How do you know that, Kelly Wand?
My mom. She's a twihard.
Good answer.
She's a twerd.
We're not going to see Twilight. Next week, we've agreed to see Predators.
That's just the male Twilight, isn't it?
Isn't Star Wars the male Twilight?
Ugh.
It can't possibly be worse than Twilight, I'm assuming. Actually, I have no idea. So we talked before. Vacancy is not good. The director, Nimrod Antal. don't laugh. As a guy who's also got a name that provokes laughter, I feel sorry for Nimrod Antal.
In Turkish, it means divine king, by the way.
See? Exactly.
Just kidding.
Divine. In Turkish, it means mime.
Right.
He did Vacancy, which was terrible. Then he did Armored, which none of us saw, so we're not sure if it's terrible or not. So
I wanted to see that, and I wanted to see Airbender next week. So, listeners, look what I have to deal with. Predators. Something awesome like Airbender.
All right, you're going to feel bad when it turns out that Predators is good.
Oh, wait. Can I say that you consider Predator 2 better than the first Predator?
I think most people do, Kelly Wand. I don't think that's a provocative position to take. Is it?
Mm. It's a different kind of jungle. Now it's the same kind of jungle. That should be the slogan for this one, because it's the jungle.
It's got Gary Busey as a government agent. It's got
what?
Paxton, doesn't it? Isn't that in the second Predator?
Oh, I thought you meant the new one.
No. Sorry to get your hopes up, yeah.
Who's in the new one?
Danny Glover's in the second one, isn't he?
Yeah, Danny Glover's the...
Yeah.
He's a cop, too. He's the Mel Gibson character and the Danny Glover character rolled into one. And I think, is it Maria Conchita Alonso?
She doesn't get killed because she's pregnant, weak.
Yeah. And you find out the
look, a baby saves, doesn't get killed by the Predator.
But that's another name I love to say.
Maria Conchita Alonso? She should be in a movie with Giancarlo Esposito. And just talk about it for an hour and a half. All right, so join us, everyone, for next week's movie will be Predator. We will be spoiling it. Predators, I'm sorry. Spoiling it for you. We will also be here with our 3x3 movies you can stop watching after the opening scene. My name is Tom Chick. I am here with Christian. Oh, Jesus, Pete. McCrossy?
You're getting really good. You're going to get this one of these days. It's Christian Morosky.
Oh, that was close. And Kelly Wand.
Podcasting is an unlikely job.
Love. The second match is ignited, and he starts to put, one of them starts to put the match to the flag at the same time I got there. I do know that I thought about maybe bowling them over. But now...